Hey, gang. Welcome to another exciting episode of National Bugle Radio on the Republic Broadcasting Network, RBN. It's the path through, it's a path of truth through a park of gayness and nonsense and bad think or whatever. That's what it is. It's a path of truth in a park that we need to take back. And if you want to help take back the park from the gayness and the anti-whiteism and whatever else, if you want to do that, go to republicbroadcasting.org and click on the donate button and send a donation. And you might even, depending on the denomination, if you get up to $115, you can get a free speech t-shirt and a free speech mug, which is better than a free t-shirt and a free mug because it's free speech. Also go to nationalbugle.com where you can download the Koshertified app so you can lead a non-kosher certified lifestyle, the first step to a non-kosher certified society. So today I have the gentleman with the show immediately preceding mine, Richard Carey. Richard, welcome to the show.
Good afternoon, Patrick.
Yes, good afternoon. Except it's evening, and I'm taking my evening dog walking. There may be a little bit of ambient sound here and there.
Well, it's always a pleasure to be on your show. And I think you're one of the people who's just mastered that multitasking ability. So.
Yeah, it's not good, but sometimes it's necessary. Yeah. But today I don't have to do that much multitasking. I'm doing the walking and you're doing the thinking. So you thought up a good theme for the show today, and you've got a lot of material that you've put together. And so tell us about it.
Okay, well, I often appreciate articles over at campusreform.org, and they cover a lot of the indoctrination at the campus environment in academia, and it's a great place to see just how much social engineering regarding political correctness and, as you mentioned, the anti-white agenda is just getting more and more commonplace, standardized, really at an exponential rate, I think you'll agree, as time goes on. And it's just something that a lot of even parents aren't that aware of, just how much more extreme things are compared to what they might assume from maybe their own experience, and even under lower than the college level as far as a primary school and a high school.
The surprising thing to people is how early it starts.
And there's a lot of stress put on the teachers now to try to hide the curriculum from the parents. Or I've even recently seen cases where they're handing phony curriculum to give to the parents when they ask to see what is being taught to their children. Now, that is, I can't believe that they're trying to get away with that. It's certainly, it's amazing that people are allowing this to continue. And
been involved in education for many, many years. I was a college professor for a number of years. I was also, if you go back far enough, I was a substitute teacher, you know, in high schools and junior high schools and elementary schools even. And of course, I know a lot of young people. I've always been involved in sports where I'm talking to young people. And I think I've managed to keep track more or less of developments, and it's amazing. But why don't you start presenting some of the facts?
Okay, well, one by one, I could go over some of the articles I've drawn from here. Let's see, this first one's at Arizona State University. A dean there writes a book alleging that grading students' writing is white supremacy. And they're suggesting to destroy all grading, and just to base it on how much labor, how many hours worth of labor, you know, you've put into the course. Otherwise, you're setting things according to white standards, they're saying, and that shouldn't be a implied as a path to success. That's one of many ways they're claiming.
Here's the thing. So, okay, if you're gonna grade on maybe performance or grade on correct answers, and that's white supremacy. Okay. Okay. So now you're gonna grade just based on effort. Is that going to be like Asian supremacy or something? Because I still don't think that's going to work out so well. That was, I don't think that would necessarily work out so well for some of the subgroups that do the complaining.
Well, in this one, it's specifically about writing skills and grammar. I mean, there is a proper way, okay, for the English language. That would be the people of Britain, okay, their language and the origins of such. Well, Shakespeare, of course, is seen as a threat, and that extends to that as well. A proper use of the English language is an unfair advantage to white people, is what's being suggested.
Okay. Now, then, so we have, say, blacks, for instance, who have grown up in the United States and rarely speak any foreign language, and yet, isn't it interesting that immigrants from China or Korea do so much better on the English portion of the SATs than blacks do? People who learned how to speak English as a second language, and they do so much better on average. So what do we make of that?
That's an excellent point, Patrick. Yes, I mean, I think it's just an example of trying to find an excuse, which is hiding the real reason, which has to do with, adapted laziness, perhaps, of the culture, combined with certain average physical mental averages, IQ averages according to race. Of course, that's the third rail you can't touch. And so I mentioned it about grammar and writing skills, also in science. I mean, over at University of New Hampshire, there's a new course that'll teach the students about racism in science. And they're basically, it seems like they're trying to hide anything that could show less than equal or favorable comparisons regarding people of color, is the main concern there.
Yeah, protecting people's feelings.
Yeah.
And sometimes, as I'm out walking with my dogs, I see yard signs that will say, in this house, love is love, and Black Lives Matter, and science is real, and a bunch of other platitudes, which almost always mean exactly the opposite of what they say, right?
I've seen that same sign around suburbs of Chicago here.
Right, it's all over. And the thing is, love is love. Okay, so you could maybe translate the sign into, like, I don't want to be gross, but like, anal is glorious and white lives don't matter, but the science is real. It's like, really? So what about genetics, what about evolution and how different groups are going to evolve differently in different environments? And that's all thrown out the window. Now, if you don't mind, I just want to talk a little bit about language, because, language, if you look at the history of nationalism, the history of nation states, right, of course, languages tend to, language groups tend to overlap with ethnic groups. They tend to. It doesn't necessarily have to, but it tends to. And if you look at the history of nation states, it's very much wrapped up in a national language. And, when Italy is known for a whole bunch of dialects, and people from Sicily and people from Turin don't necessarily even understand each other all that well. Well, that's because it united very late. It united, in 1868, I think. And so it was late to try to nationalize a particular dialect, although countries like London that have, or England that have longer histories as a national entity, they were able to, unite along, standardize a particular dialect. And in the case of Britain, it was the dialect around London. And it's very important for a national entity to have a common language, so that you can communicate with each other. This is very important, and you know, it's important for governing. But then even to a higher degree, when you get into law, and I don't know if you've ever tried to read legal documents, they're really, really tough to read. You almost need, it's almost a legalese is almost a language unto itself. But without people being able to agree on what the meaning of words and sentences are, then can you really have a functioning political entity? And that's the question. That's the question I leave you with.
Well, I don't think that that's the focus. I mean, these people don't really care about anything remaining homogenous, certainly. I mean, more of a Tower of Babel sort of environment, to use a Bible reference, is what these people want with their multiculturalism. So I don't think they would care about that truth. But I'd like to hear your response to these paragraphs really quickly on this, because it seems like they're concerned about any sort of identification of race in their concern of science being racist. Racism in science is like racism in all other aspects of our society. As we say in the course syllabus, science is often viewed as culturally neutral, and scientific information is often presented as objective and unbiased. This is from a gentleman named Frey, who chairs the College of Life Science and Agriculture's Diversity, Equity, and Inclusion Committee. He added that all of us in the U.S. were raised with a 400-year history of racism, and thus we all hold biases, implicit and otherwise. As a result, it is difficult for Black, Indigenous people, and people of color to enter and fully participate in STEM disciplines. As white people, we need to study and understand the history of white people in the U.S. and globally in constructing whiteness and in constructing the political system of race. So it's trying to basically, trying to say that, that whole argument, there's another article I have here. It has got this gentleman who's got that old reference that race is a social construct, right? But so I don't know, some of it is related to that. I think some of it is also just anything that could show differences among the races. It seems that that's the biggest concern with the racism in science. Like anything related to Darwin or anyone who's done research on the races and, you know, different differences they have. That's not, I mean, it's only in the eye of the beholder to see that as something they're offended by.
So especially if you're looking at the history of science, which is lots of fun. There was a great documentary series that was made 50 years ago by the BBC. There's a Jewish mathematician and biologist named Jacob Bernofsky. And, you know, in one of the later episodes, he goes a little Holocausty, but whatever. I'll forgive him on that. But, you know, it was on the history of science. It was called The Ascent of Man, kind of a play of words on Darwin's book, The Descent of Man. So The Ascent of Man. And, you know, Carl Sagan, another Jewish scientist, he did a show that was kind of modeled after it. It wasn't as good, but, you know, it was okay. There's a lot out there. But the thing is, when you look at the history of science, for the most part, you're looking at the history of Western civilization. It's you know, kind of part and parcel of the same thing. And the reason that, I don't know, maybe the reason they're looking at science as being racist isn't because white people are dominant and they like science, but that white people basically built up science, and that's how they became dominant. So white people were able to cross the ocean and get back home again because they had the superior navigational tools, the sextant, and eventually figured out the problem of longitude. And, you know, if you want to look up longitude, there's a very interesting scientific history around measuring longitude. They were able to make maps. And, you know, the Polynesians were able to go places, but they weren't able to come back, right? They, you know, they just go out and find an island, and then they'd be there until, for whatever reason, some others struck out on canoes. And probably most of the people who struck out on these outrigger canoes never got anywhere and drowned eventually. But white people with science were able to, you know, in this case, navigate the oceans. But, you know, there's so many other things that they were able to do with the science that was, for the most part, developed along with Western civilization. And I guess that kind of stings, right? Maybe if you're an Oriental, because like the Chinese in particular, you know, they can say, well, you know, you might have had guns, but we invented the gunpowder. Or, you know, you might have had this, but we invented that. And so they can, maybe they don't feel as bad about it. But if you're black, and Africans, for the most part, didn't even invent two-story houses, right? Maybe it hurts your feelings, and it's all about the feels, isn't it?
I have so we mentioned writing and grammar skills, and mentioned science, and then math, of course, mathematics. We have an example of a Oregon Department of Education program, which is claiming math is racist because it requires a right answer. The concept of mathematics being purely objective is unequivocally false, they're saying. And let's see, what else did I highlight here? Examples of white supremacy culture cited by the document include a focus on getting the right answer and requiring students to show their work. The problem that math and arithmetic insists on correct answers is actually a hidden form of white supremacy, it says. And the materials also instruct teachers to choose problems that have complex, competing, or multiple answers so that students can come up with at least two answers in order to challenge standardized test questions. Well, that'll make them feel really warm and fuzzy, wouldn't you say, Doctor?
Yeah, and that's what you want. You want warm and fuzzy engineering on bridges. They'll stay up if you believe in them, right? Won't they? Was it the Challenger? You know, we've had two space shuttles that exploded, right? The one was the Challenger. Was that the O-rings? And what was the other one? The Discovery or something? One of them, and I think the issue was they had failed to convert or properly convert from English measurements to metric measurements. And it made the math wrong, and that's what happens. So if you get the math wrong, the bridge collapses. The rocket ship explodes. Things don't work if you get the math wrong. But, I went to a Aboriginal settlement outside of Alice Springs in the outback, the Australian Northern Territories. And I was talking to the white man who was running it. He's, he was a missionary, so he was some sort of clergyman. And, you know, he was explaining the difficulty in educating Aborigines. And, you know, you have to figure that until just a few generations ago, they had nothing to count, for one thing. Well, for another thing, they never had a reason to sit behind a desk for 6 hours at a time, right? Or to be inside 6 hours. I mean, there was no inside to be inside. Mm. And they didn't evolve that way. There was nothing to count. They were just getting the food they needed for that day. They weren't storing things. They weren't keeping track of things. There was nothing to count. And hence their languages, if they had numbers at all, I don't think any of the Aboriginal languages got up to 20. And some of them didn't have numbers at all or had numbers that went maybe to 3. Because there was no reason to count things. And so if you're not counting, why devote part of your brain to mathematical skills when you could be devoting it, that part of the brain, to something that's useful for you, like the skills, the cognitive abilities for tracking animals, for instance, which would be useful, although it's not as useful to us. So, I mean, and you see it, you know, the Africans, there was more to count there, but they don't do nearly as well. They do better than Aboriginals. They don't do as well as whites. And then there's certain subgroups, you know, Ashkenazi Jews, for instance, who were involved in business and therefore needed accounting. Indian Brahmin, who, you know, they had their own castes, and many of them were involved in that type of professions that required not mathematical acumen in order to be successful and reproduce. But, you know, we kind of blew into the break, so we're going to have to cut it off. We'll be back in just a second.
As a listener of RBN, you're surely concerned about being informed and being ready for whatever may come. Please consider the following questionnaire as a soul-jarring wake-up call. If you answer no to more than two of these following questions, you probably aren't going to make it through any major disruption in our country. The questions were compiled by people that have been there. Are you really ready? Do you own your own firearm for the primary defense and protection of you and your loved ones? Have you ever been professionally trained to stand against life-threatening behavior? Have you ever practiced enough to fire 500 rounds during a 2 to 4 day time frame, day and night? Can you load, unload, fire, and clear a jam in total darkness? Have all the adults in your household been professionally trained? Are you, life and death, comfortable with your abilities with pistol, revolver, shotgun, and rifle? Are you aware that everything that you do to prepare for an emergency is a waste of time, money, and energy? If you haven't honed your abilities to their highest level to protect and keep what you have, do you have the repair parts that will most likely be needed for each of your firearm, and do you have the ability to install those parts? Could you completely clean every firearm you own? Are you aware that your body won't go where your mind hasn't been? In other words, without proper training, followed by regular practice, you probably will not win a gunfight. Well, how did you measure up? Take the once-in-a-lifetime opportunity to start correcting your deficiencies by receiving your Commander Lifetime Membership with Front Sight Firearms Training Facility. A one-time donation to RBN for $500 will give you a Commander Lifetime Membership at Front Sight as a tremendously huge thank-you bonus. See details on RBN's webpage to make it happen. The clock is ticking. You had better be ready before it happens.
Please view, like, and subscribe to our YouTube channel, Stop Terrorism. Please contact us if you or anyone you know who wants to be on our show at thetruthpharmacy@gmail.com. Keep it real. Take the red pill.
So, you love talk radio, then you'll love TalkStreamLive.com. TalkStream Live is always on, 24-7, with the best streaming talk shows. Find your favorite talkers and discover some new ones. It's free, readily available online or on mobile with any smartphone or tablet. Finding your favorite talk shows all in one place has gotten a whole lot easier. Just go to TalkStreamLive.com. Be sure to download the free apps from Google Play or the iTunes App Store.
And we are back, Richard Carey and I. We are talking about what's the political correctness in schools and the aversion to anything that might indicate any kind of biological basis to races or any kind of racial differences. So what else do you have for us?
Just to sum up on the math topic, they're mentioning even in this course over at Oregon's Department of Education curriculum, this math is racist class, that, well, the emphasis, often they're saying the emphasis is placed on learning math in the real world, according to their toolkit's assertion, which is ridiculous if they're saying that it's not important to have the correct answer. Once these students get out there in the real world, like you say, with engineering careers and what have you, they're going to want that right answer, or you know, they're not going to keep the job. People's lives could be at stake so much. It's just ridiculous on the face of it. So there's a bit of flip-flopping and, a bit of a shift in focus where it's not too consistent. Another point mentions that they want to expose students to examples of people who have used math as resistance. So people of color who have used math as resistance to what? I guess the system of white supremacy, of colonialism, or I guess fill in the blank with that. And another thing that was added, though, by people criticizing. The only thing the kinds of courses we've been discussing here qualify one for is social activism and an inflated sense of his own importance. It certainly won't prepare anyone for engineering, foreign language competence, or systematic thinking. And Bill Gates, to dovetail from that, Bill Gates funneled $1 million to push Math is Racist, the Gates Foundation, to some of these universities' programs, with a $1 million check. Leading universities and local governments are building an environment to bring anti-racism efforts to mathematics. A pathway to equitable instruction exists to address barriers to math equity. And it's, I mean, coming from Bill Gates, when, you know, with computer programming, again, something where you have to have, you know, there is an objective right and wrong answer if you want it to work properly. He never would have had, you know, the amount of control over software development if he actually embraced this.
In fairness, Windows doesn't always operate properly.
Okay, true. And of course, he did originally purchase, you know, the initial startup from others, and you know, it wasn't so much creativity as entrepreneurship.
And yeah, marketing or business. So his first, he got rich off of MS-DOS, the operating system, which is just a scaled down version of Unix, the Unix operating system that had been used on these IBM mainframes. And for whatever reason, IBM couldn't be bothered to try to scale it down themselves for microcomputers, which they weren't interested in. And Bill Gates took advantage of that. And, you know, there's just a lot of similarities between Unix and MS-DOS for anybody who knows both. But then once he had the marketing power, or he had the power of more or less a monopoly over the operating systems, ripped Windows was largely an adaptation from the Apple operating system, you know, where you've got graphic user interface. Then he ripped off Microsoft Word is a ripoff of, Word Perfect more than Word Star. X is a ripoff of Lotus 1-2-3. You know, everything was just a ripoff of something else. And the competing programs were better, but they weren't bundled into your computer when you bought it, along with the operating system.
Mm-hmm.
So Bill Gates is a big jerk.
Yeah. And just to touch...
I wonder how good at math Bill Gates is.
Right. And as far as the anti-racism notion in general, Harvard University, their students are pushing for curriculum audits of mandatory anti-racism courses. They were sending an open letter to administrators demanding racial equity reforms. Among the demands were a new semester-long class on global racism, colonialism, and public policy, a mandatory anti-racism workshop, and a comprehensive audit of all curricula with an anti-colonial lens. And this thing came out a couple months ago, yep. That article. I just saw now an article, a poll. Over 40% of Harvard professors say the school's standing is worsening. Now, could there be a connection with the PC?
Well, good. Okay, hey, listen, we got to go off to the break, but we'll be right back.
Once a jolly swagman camped by the Billy Bong under the shade of a coolabah tree. When he sang as he watched and waited till his billy boiled, you'll come a-waltzing Matilda with me. Waltzing Matilda, waltzing Matilda, you'll come a-waltzing Matilda with me.
I want the truth! You can't handle the truth!
You're listening to Republic Broadcasting Network. Real news, real talk, real people. Because you can handle the truth.
Homeowners, are you in foreclosure, expecting to be served with a foreclosure lawsuit, or suspect your lender has coerced you into an illegal mortgage transaction? A huge number of mortgages made in the last 10 years have legal issues and are possibly defective. State laws and the U.S. Supreme Court have upheld that defective mortgage documents are grounds for foreclosure defense and for counterclaims in favor of the homeowner. If your mortgage has been sold or assigned since closing the loan, it may be defective and you may be paying the wrong party, and the lender may not have standing or the right to foreclose or collect payments under the law. If you would like to know if your mortgage is legal or not, or know if you are paying the right party, we can help. Our initial consultations are free of charge. We are not attorneys. We are legal researchers and work closely with experienced lawyers who know how to help you find the evidence to help you keep your home. Call toll free 1-855-2-KEEP-IT. That's 1-855-2-KEEP-IT today.
For over 20 years now, Extendivite has proven time and again it really works. Here is a testimonial from Amazon.com. I received an arterial switch at birth. In my mid-20s, I started getting slight runs of NSVT. Nothing too serious, but enough to cause worry. I started taking Extendivite a little over 2 years ago, and it helped cut the palpitations and NSVT down drastically. This isn't a cure-all supplement. I strongly recommend a good diet and exercise to aid in any heart troubles you may be having. And I strongly recommend giving Extendivite a try. Extendivite is only $69.95 for a 2-month supply. To order, call 1-877-928-8822 or visit heartdrop.com. That's HEARTDROP.com.
Extend your life with Extendivite.
Hey, gang. Patrick Slattery here with an important message that is pertinent to anyone who shops for groceries, eats food, or just has an inquisitive mind like myself. What I'm about to introduce you to is a segment of our food culture that has been kept so low profile to the American public that virtually no one is aware of how dominant it is on our refrigerator and cupboard shelves. What I'm talking about is the kosher certification industry and a new app, Koshertify, that delivers a comprehensive education on all aspects regarding this little-known practice. After reviewing this app, I found that it is useful for practically anyone who purchases food, regardless of their religious faith or identity. Its database of products not kosher certified is a win-win convenience for all food-conscious people. So why not check out thekosherquestion.com or click on the link at nationalbugle.com and see how modifying your grocery shopping with the Koshertified app can make a huge difference for your future.
So 40% of Harvard professors think their standing, the school's standing, is worsening. It really ought to be, because Harvard, it really sucks. And in certain ways, I think places like that maybe haven't gone quite as crazy, like Stanford and the University of Chicago, are gaining ground. I think some years Stanford is harder to get into than Harvard. Harvard, though, it's got its legacy. But, you know, I've been around to a lot of college campuses over the past, you know, well, many years. And one college that I used to hold in high esteem, Swarthmore College outside of Philadelphia, last time I went to it, I was so shocked. I was shocked and grossed to the max. It was like everything was gay. They were... they have the RAs at every dorm. They will talk to your children about safe sex practices. Like, really? Do we need that? And then, you know, they have some holiday, like on Halloween, where What was it? I was just something crazy. Oh, and they were doing the pronouns. You know, everybody was supposed to introduce themselves with pronouns. And so, I mean, my pronouns were, you know, Your Majesty and whatever. But it's just, it's really sad what's happened to so many of these schools, which, you know, Swarthmore, for instance, Michael Dukakis, if you remember him, the presidential candidate from 1988, mm-hmm. he turned down Harvard in order to go to Swarthmore. So it used to be considered one of the top schools in the country, but now it's just a joke, and it's a shame. So,
well, and then how about, well, the topic of the theater? I mean, not just in academia, but in the world. There's a great article I just wanted to read a couple little bits from, because it's a bit too long to do the whole thing, but this gentleman is an actor. He may be actually located in England from the way some of his knowledge of the goings on there is, but basically how, you know, the straight white actor is becoming obsolete or just so politically incorrect, he's not even needed or hardly usable. I mean, basically affirmative action is everywhere now in casting, and it's a complete double standard, as you well know.
And how about commercials? I mean, this is one of the things. And for anybody out there who, you know, maybe you've got an IRA and you've got stocks in the IRA, you get these, like, you can vote, right? You get these voting rights that come along with the stock. And once upon a time when they were having shareholders meetings, if there was one nearby you, you could go. But you can still submit questions often. You can submit questions to the management. I invite everybody to question why you have such anti-white advertising or things like that. Why did you give all this money to Black Lives Matter? But, you know, you look at the advertising, and what was I looking at? I was looking at, was it my bank's website today? And they had six pictures of people. And I think five of the pictures featured blacks, and then one maybe Asians. And that was that. There were no white people at all. White people need not apply. And, you know, another insurance company, I think it was Aetna, and they were showing pictures of happy black families reuniting, you know, the kid coming home from college or a soldier coming home, and there's a welcome home party and everybody's happy. And then you turn the page and the next picture is of a double amputee in a wheelchair, a white amputee. And the white people were all mutilated, and they were using mutilated white people in their ads.
Oh, yeah, yeah. I mean, the affirmative action standards as well, like you say. Here, if I could read these couple of paragraphs from this actor. I picked a couple, like, in the middle, you know, of the article, skipping around. I've been a professional actor for 50 years. I'm also a proud member of that most despised of all groups, old white men. I'm not a star or even a semi-name, but you have probably seen and heard me many times. I know the world of advertising and show business, and I know how, why, and by whom our screens are being darkened. I am being denied work, and our past and future are being stolen from us. The answer is BAME. It stands for Black, Asian, or Mixed Ethnicity. And that acronym is now an essential part of every media company's ethos. When a brand is hiring actors for a commercial, or a production company is hiring actors for a play, movie, or TV program, they proudly trumpet the fact that they prefer to see or will only see performers who are BAME. Imagine what would happen if anyone advertised with a preference for white actors or actresses. Oriental audiences are more forthright in their opinions. They want white heroes. Star Wars films that feature black actors flop in China, a very important film market. So the Star Wars producers avoid putting black faces on the film posters, and the latest Star Wars had to remove a gay kiss to make it acceptable to Orientals who want their heroes straight, too. And then a little further down, the levels of race and gender blind, okay, casting mandated included At least one lead character must be non-white, 50-50 male-female ratio in entire cast, at least 20% of cast must be non-white, at least 10% must be LGBTQ, at least 7% disabled, and a large portion of plot lines and filming locations must be set among underrepresented groups. And a little further down here, meanwhile, for all their disingenuous claims for race blindness, black performers insist on race-based preferential treatment and love, quote-unquote, acting black, especially in period dramas. Notice how black actors in plays by Shaw, Ibsen, or Wilde will use a ghetto pose and vocal inflection to get a cheap laugh. They are black to their bones, and they know it, and are happy to play the minstrel if it's to their advantage. A little later down, I have starred in many TV commercials for top brands that were broadcast worldwide. I assure you that it isn't merely fashion or whim that matches so many black men with white women. In a 30-second commercial, every second counts and nothing appears on screen by chance. I have seen directors, clients, and cameramen almost come to blows and arguments over the color of my shirt. How much more debate has gone into the color of the actor's skin? So these racial pairings are not accidental, but a blatant attempt to break down the resistance to race mixing for all races. Listen to black talk radio programs and you will hear black women weep that black men are encouraged to get blondes. In fact, black nationalists, our mere image and possible allies, believe that race mixing is the ultimate sin. And we know what happens to Asian girls who race mix. But as with films, the cultural Marxists don't give a damn and plow on, sacrificing profit for propaganda. Alongside the tribe that foments and feasts off our replacement lives an opportunistic parasite, the black race hustler. The uber-obnoxious Whoopi Goldberg is a master of this scam. And despite being as funny as a fire in an orphanage, Whoopi has made a fortune playing the fat, sassy soul sister who is the repository of all wisdom. She is always the smartest person in the house she cleans. You'll notice the smart, sassy maid stereotype is a staple of sitcoms. She's certainly smarter than the doofus white dad who is the butt of all her jokes. There's literally a genre of U.S. sitcom called Doofus Dad. And one more bit from it. Believing her own BS, Goldberg has morphed into a political pundit. She holds forth daily on US TV on all manner of subjects while injecting the race card into all of them, no matter how misplaced. She gets away with this because whites are afraid of challenging her, lest they be called racist. Believe me, if you think Jews are good at squeezing the Holocaust into any discussion, you ain't seen nothing till you seen Whoopi at work. We have the Jewish director Mike Nichols to thank for Goldberg's rise to fame. So, I don't know, that was from an actor who's been in it all his life, and you know, he can hardly get any roles now, you know, because the white male is obsolete.
Indeed, the white male is obsolete, and reality can imitate fiction, and I think people, you know, the people who create fiction, in Hollywood, anybody will tell you, Hollywood is obviously run by Jews. Lots of people have joked about it, like at the Academy Awards, whether it's Seth MacFarlane or Steve Martin. How many people have joked at the Academy Awards about all the Jews who run Hollywood? And the Jews who run Hollywood are very cognizant of this. And so they have been creating the sassy black maid and the doofus white dad. Even when tokenism was relatively minor, still you'd always have, if you're going into court, there would be a black woman who would be the judge. You know, they've always been doing these things, but it's just gone hyperbolic now. And of course, there's only an extent to which reality can imitate fiction, because the black geniuses in fiction have proved to be a little bit hard to imitate, and so that's where you get the cognitive dissonance between what's being portrayed on the screen and what people see in their everyday lives. And it's I'd like to say it's a matter of time before that cognitive dissonance wins the day, but who knows? It's gone so far already.
And I'm amazed sometimes to talk to smart, educated people who are still saying, well, you know, but blacks are only committing crimes because they don't have opportunities. I don't know when the last time you heard that was. Maybe it's more of a boomer thing to say that, more it's a boomer cope. I don't know.
Right. Yeah, well, no, you definitely hear a lot of the just the claims to just a disadvantaged environment in the U.S. with the way conditions are. I mean, as if, you just could never recover after the so-called colonialism, you know, I mean, including from a lot of these people who believe that in the past, well, you know, the whole we was Kangs, black Israelites sort of line of thinking, that still can't explain why, you know, that couldn't be maintained, or why you couldn't shrug off the past of slavery or whatever, once you had enough equal footing in society, as long as you apply yourself. And the parents and the indoctrination of the younger grades that we were talking about, and the parents oblivious to it. I mean, that is a big issue now with the critical race theory. I mean, K through 12 especially are under attack now, and that's just such a young age, where just like the gender stuff, which is even more of a crime, really, to expose them to and rob their youth. Here's a quote from this one article where California is drawing from critical race theory for their ethnic studies curriculum. Parents should note that we may expect CRT standards to be imposed on private schools and homeschools, as well as take over independent assessors such as the College Board. The radical activists will seek to ensure that there is no escape from the agenda simply by withdrawing from the public schools. Would-be teachers will take undergraduate courses in CRT. So too will the teachers going for MAs, PhDs, and continuing education. The requirement will shift large proportion of education employment to radical activists. So radical activists, that's seen as a good thing. Mm-hmm. University of Illinois admits white supremacy, white privilege workshop is not a debate. The Black Lives Matter conditioning on the campuses too. In Boulder, Colorado, university there, Black Lives Matter values are a non-negotiable condition of enrollment. They're saying the university dictated which opinions of the recent waves of Black Lives Matter protests will be accepted by the school. This was largely last summer, largely. And on June 5th last year, they sent out a memo to students and faculty providing a statement on the recent uprisings. The announcement described a supporting opinion of Black Lives Matter as a non-negotiable condition of enrollment and employment. And the statement would seem to contradict the university's previous statements on the constitutional right to free speech, this article pointed out. Another one, there was a professor at University of Vermont. He was rebuking social justice theory, refusing to resign. So some people are standing up, criticizing. After the professor criticized the notion of whiteness, administrators denounced his comments. He refuses to resign. Kynesvetter said that he first heard of the term whiteness when a faculty member offered to help me with it, like it was some kind of disease, an experience that he described as dehumanizing. So I don't know what your experiences were with earlier levels of in the campus environment, as far as anyone trying to coax you toward. I mean, it was far more mild, I assume, back in the times you were referring to when you were teaching.
Well, when I was teaching, okay, so let's just say 15 years ago, I remember students coming up to me. And the thing is, I was pretty much a lefty, probably more than most professors, I would assume. I mean, I was a Naderite. I was friends with Ralph Nader. And but I had people, like conservative students, come up to me complaining about all their other teachers, because I would let them have their say. And maybe I'd say, okay, that's interesting. I don't know if I buy it, but that's interesting. And that would, you know, that's how I was. And they'd say, nobody else would let them express themselves. They were wrong, and they would be graded harshly. And I couldn't, I really couldn't fathom that. Cause I don't know. I never felt like that when I was in undergraduate. I never felt that kind of pressure, although I wasn't studying political science as an undergraduate. I was studying foreign languages mostly, and math and science. And so I just never felt it. I got into political science later. But, you know, we are up at the break, so we're going to pause and we'll be right back.
Traveling in a fighter combi on a hippie trailhead full of zombies. I met a strange lady, she made me nervous. She took me in and gave me breakfast. And she said, do you come from a land down under?
Homeowners, if your lender has gone out of business or sold your transaction to another lender or servicer, you may be the victim of a wrongful foreclosure resulting in the loss of your home. If you've already lost your home, are in foreclosure, or even in good standing, you can challenge the mortgage transaction's illegal issue and your property can be restored to you, and your foreclosure can be stopped or reversed and the mortgage transaction declared unenforceable. State laws, U.S. title codes, the Uniform Commercial Codes, and U.S. Supreme Court rulings have upheld that defective mortgage documentations can reverse or stop foreclosures and enforce property title claims in favor of the homeowner. We are having successes in stopping the process of foreclosure, the enforcement of the foreclosure judgments, the sale of property, and evictions after the sale. We are not attorneys, and we don't give legal advice. We are a professional team of legal researchers, providing forensic mortgage audits and expert witnesses. We have the knowledge to produce the evidence and enforce laws regarding your legal issues. We've been in business for 12 years without a complaint. Consultations are free, and we provide a free title search to confirm if your mortgage has legal defects. Please call 855-253-3748. 855, the number 2, keep it today.
Extendivite 7-herb formulation is approved to help maintain cardiovascular health and help lower blood lipid levels in adults. Extendivite is made from hawthorn, garlic, valerian, cayenne, bilberry, ginkgo biloba, and milk thistle. The herbs in Extendivite have been chosen for their ability to help with overall health. Many people have reported improved energy and stamina in just a few months. If you think you could feel just a little bit better, then Extendivite may just be for you. Extendivite is an all-natural supplement. Extendivite is only $69.95 for a 2-month supply. To order, call 1-877-928-8822 or visit heartdrop.com. That's HEARTDROP.com.
Extend your life with Extendovite.
Hey gang, Patrick Slattery here with an important message that is pertinent to anyone who shops for groceries, eats food, or just has an inquisitive mind like myself. What I'm about to introduce you to is a segment of our food culture that has been kept so low profile to the American public that virtually no one is aware of how dominant it is on our refrigerator and cupboard shelves. What I'm talking about is the kosher certification industry and the new app, KosherTify, that delivers a comprehensive education on all aspects regarding this little-known practice. After reviewing this app, I found that it is useful for practically anyone who purchases food, regardless of their religious faith or identity. Its database of products not kosher certified is a win-win convenience for all food-conscious people. So why not check out thekosherquestion.com or click on the link at nationalbugle.com and see how modifying your grocery shopping with the KosherTified app can make a huge difference for your future.
Okay, we just have a few more minutes. So what else do you have for us?
Well, Rocky Mountain College hosted a so-called community radical. An event was titled The Good Troublemaker, coordinated by the college's Diversity and Inclusivity Task Force. This is an example of how it's a one-way street, you know, both in casting with the theater and just this attitude of being a racist. This guy conducting this webinar for them, First of all, he says, race isn't a real thing. It's a political construct, and that race was ultimately created by white people for white people, specifically to oppress people of color. And insists in one question during the discussion, well, it dealt with people of color being on the racist spectrum. You know, can a non-white person be racist? And his response was that he goes back and forth with this a lot, but his instinct is to say, no, you can't put people of color on that spectrum, although he's willing to be challenged. What I would say, he continued, because I'm assuming that this is coming from a white person, is don't worry about people of color, worry about yourself. He says he defines racism as one, a system of advantage for white people, two, the systematic oppression of people of color, three, a belief in white supremacy of white people, and the institutional power to enforce that belief.
Okay, so his definitions have white and non-white as part of it. So by definition, in other words, by definition, only white people can be racist.
Yes. Yeah, he says that straight out. Using that definition, I do believe that it's not possible for a person of color to be a racist.
Of course not, because that's the definition. He's defined it that way.
So that's what we've learned today, I guess.
Okay, children, what have we learned today? You know, you mentioned something during the break about standardized tests, which are no longer being used for college admissions at many schools. Mm-hmm. And yet in like in the Orient, in Korea and Japan, and I would assume China, that's all they use, is these blind, largely standardized tests. I mean, there are essay questions as well. And of course, the history of that goes back literally thousands of years to over 1,000 years, probably, you know, maybe 1,500 years. The Chinese Mandarin system, the examinations to be a civil servant, and I think overall it's worked pretty well for the Orientals. Their standardized tests, you know, people in the entrance exams, nobody knows who you are. You're just a number to the graders, and nobody knows who you are. Whereas here, you write these essays talking about how your grandmother survived the Holocaust. Okay, this person's in. All right. So, any last words before we wrap it up?
I guess I would just say that we need homeschooling, perhaps, as I don't think this is going to improve itself on its own.
Yeah, it's kind of a shame, because it's a lot of work to educate a kid, and I think kids need socialization. So I was really, really reluctant to promote homeschooling, but everything's gotten so bad. Even the private schools have gotten so bad. And so I think if you're a person now raising young children, I don't know what kind of choice you have. So it's too bad. But thank you, Richard, for joining me.
Oh, it was a pleasure. I had a lot of fun. Thank you, Dr. Slater.
And thank you, and I'll be back again tomorrow with another exciting episode of National Bugle Radio.
Fauci man can. The Fauci man can, because he mixes it with lies and makes the world lock down. The Fauci man makes everything he makes stupefying and malicious. And if he gets all his wishes, we'll be sleeping with the fishes. Who can take a crisis?
Homeowners, are you in foreclosure, expecting to be served with a foreclosure lawsuit, or suspect your lender has coerced you into an illegal mortgage transaction? A huge number of mortgages made in the last 10 years have legal issues and are possibly defective. State laws and the U.S. Supreme Court have upheld that defective mortgage documents are grounds for foreclosure defense and for counterclaims in favor of the homeowner. If your mortgage has been sold or assigned since closing the loan, it may be defective and you may be paying the wrong part, and the lender may not have standing or the right to foreclose or collect payments under the law. If you would like to know if your mortgage is legal or not, or know if you are paying the right party, we can help. Our initial consultations are free of charge. We are not attorneys. We are legal researchers and work closely with experienced lawyers who know how to help you find the evidence to help you keep your home. Call toll-free 1-855-2-KEEP-IT. That's 1-855-2-KEEP-IT today.
You're listening to Republic Broadcasting Network. Because you can handle the truth.